In the late 1990s, the price of term life insurance fell dramatically. This posed something of a mystery, for the decline had no obvious cause. Other types of insurance, including health and automobile and homeowners coverage, were certainly not falling in price. Nor had there been any radical change among insurance companies, insurance brokers, or the people who buy term life insurance. So what happened? The internet happened. In the spring of 1996, Quotesmith.com became the first of several websites that enabled a customer to compare, within seconds, the price of term life insurance sold by dozens of different companies. For such websites, term life insurance was a perfect product. Unlike other forms of insurance, including whole life insurance, which is a far more complicated financial instrument, term life policies are fairly homogeneous. One 30-year guaranteed policy for $1 million is essentially identical to the next. So what really matters is the price. Shopping around for the cheapest policy, a process that had been convoluted and time-consuming, was suddenly made simple. With customers able to instantaneously find the cheapest policy, the more expensive companies had no choice but to lower their prices. Suddenly, customers were paying $1 billion less a year for term life insurance. It is worth noting that these websites only listed prices. They didn't even sell the policies. So it wasn't really insurance they were peddling. Like Stetson Kennedy, they were dealing in information. Had the internet been around when Kennedy infiltrated the Klan, he probably would have rushed home after each meeting and blogged his brains out. To be sure, there are differences between exposing the Ku Klux Klan and exposing insurance companies' high premiums. The Klan trafficked in secret information whose secrecy engendered fear, while insurance prices were less a secret than a set of facts dispensed in a way that made comparisons difficult. But in both instances, the dissemination of the information diluted its power. As Supreme Court Justice Louis D. Brandeis once wrote, "Sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants." Information is a beacon, a cudgel, an olive branch, a deterrent, depending on who wields it and how. Information is so powerful that the assumption of information, even if the information does not actually exist, can have a sobering effect. Consider the case of a one-day-old car. The day that a car is driven off the lot is the worst day in its life, for it instantly loses as much as a quarter of its value. This might seem absurd, but we know it to be true. A new car that was bought for $20,000 cannot be resold for more than perhaps $15,000. Why? Because the only person who might logically want to resell a brand new car is someone who found the car to be a lemon. So even if the car isn't a lemon, a potential buyer assumes that it is. He assumes that the seller has some information about the car that he, the buyer, does not have, and the seller is punished for this assumed information. And if the car is a lemon, the seller would do well to wait a year to sell it. By then, the suspicion of lemonness will have faded. By then, some people will be selling their perfectly good year-old cars, and the lemon can blend in with them, likely selling for more than it is truly worth. It is common that one party to a transaction has better information than another party. In the parlance of economists, such a case is known as an information asymmetry. We accept as a verity of capitalism that someone, usually an expert, knows more than someone else, usually a consumer. But information asymmetries everywhere have in fact been mortally wounded by the internet. Information is the currency of the internet. As a medium, the internet is brilliantly efficient at shifting information from the hands of those who have it into the hands of those who do not. Often, as in the case of term life insurance policies, the information existed, but in a woefully scattered way. In such instances, the internet acts like a giant horseshoe magnet waved over an endless sea of haystacks, plucking the needle out of each one. Just as Stetson Kennedy accomplished what no journalist, do-gooder, or prosecutor could, the internet has accomplished what no consumer advocate could. It has vastly shrunk the gap between the experts and the public. The internet has proven particularly fruitful for situations in which a face-to-face encounter with an expert might actually exacerbate the problem of asymmetrical information, situations in which an expert uses his informational advantage to make us feel stupid or rushed or cheap or ignoble. Consider a scenario in which your loved one has just died, and now the funeral director, who knows that you know next to nothing about his business and are under emotional duress to boot, steers you to the $7,000 mahogany casket. Or consider the automobile dealership. The salesman does his best to obscure the car's base price under a mountain of add-ons and incentives. Later, however, in the cool-headed calm of your home, you can use the internet to find out exactly how much the dealer paid the manufacturer for that car. Or you might just log on to www.tributedirect.com and buy that mahogany casket yourself for just $3,200 delivered overnight. Unless you decide to spend $2,995 for The Last Hole, a casket with golf scenes, or Memories of the Hunt, featuring big-racked bucks and other prey, or one of the much cheaper models that the funeral director somehow failed to even mention. The internet, powerful as it is, has hardly slain the beast that is information asymmetry. Consider the so-called corporate scandals of the early 2000s. The crimes committed by Enron included hidden partnerships, disguised debt, and the manipulation of energy markets. Henry Blodgett of Merrill Lynch and Jack Grubman of Salomon Smith Barney wrote glowing research reports of companies they knew to be junk. Frank Quattrone of Credit Suisse First Boston covered up an investigation into how his company awarded shares of hot initial public offerings. Sam Waxel dumped his ImClone shares when he got early word of a damaging report from the Food and Drug Administration. His friend Martha Stewart also dumped her shares, then lied about the reason. WorldCom and Global Crossing fabricated billions of dollars in revenues to pump up their stock prices. One group of mutual fund companies let preferred customers trade at preferred prices, and another group was charged with hiding management fees. Though extraordinarily diverse, these crimes all have a common trait. They were sins of information. Most of them involved an expert or a gang of experts promoting false information or hiding true information. In each case, the experts were trying to keep the information asymmetry as asymmetrical as possible.